Young Writers Hub podcast with Matt and Wes.
Hello, I'm Bob Wilcox. Welcome to the Goalposts. Now I'm joking. I'm Matt Sharp, and I'll be the host of this Young Writers Hub podcast. And with me is the Young Writers Hub coordinator, Wes Brown.
Wes
Brown.
It's turned into Steve McLaren.
That's my speech impediment's going on.
You made me feel bad now.
Well, doesn't matter. Do you want to tell us what you've been up to for now, recently?
Well, Wesh has just come back from a higher education committee meeting facilitated by Norway, and we've just been running Viewing Writers Hub, really. We're starting to publish new writing.
Is that bi-monthly?
It is bi-monthly, yeah.
Well, I know more about this than you do.
Yeah.
All right, so you start to publish your own stuff on the website?
We're publishing more blogs and book reviews and all that kind of stuff, but the publication is going to be a sort of online magazine available.
In the style of the Cadaverine and things like that.
It'd be like the Cadaverine, and it's going to be accessible to student members who get other benefits of NAWE, including discounts to workshops, conferences, events, and the 5 issues of this magazine.
Okay, well, maybe we'll do a podcast on that at a later date. Well, this podcast is actually going to be more about how to get started in creative writing, basically. With us is Wes Brown, who is actually a novelist, and I'm more of an amateur writer. I've got one thing in the pipeline to be published for the Cadaverine, but other than that, I'm completely novice, just like most of you will be. But Wes Brown here, professional for how long? Well,
I got my first story published and paid for when I was 18.
Well, you've had about 6 years experience of writing, so
you have 7. Now, yeah.
7. Mm-hmm. So you'll be our guardian for this voyage. Well, so hopefully you'll give us some really good, insightful tips of this industry which we're all trying to embark in. There's a cat over there. I didn't know you had a cat.
Oh, yes, that's Lucy.
That's Lucy.
Yeah.
5 information for our podcast, isn't it? It's a nice looking cat as well.
How did she get in the studio?
I don't know. Studio.
What's she doing in the studio? Such a professional setup we've got here.
Don DeLillo on the back.
Don DeLillo.
Don DeLillo.
At least it's not Wes Brown.
Wes Brown. No one wants to read Wes Brown.
Nobody does.
Wes Brown. Oh, there's a chance. Wes Brown. Very popular. Good footballer as well.
He's got a rejuvenation at Sunderland. It's been reborn.
He needed to. Anyway, this is going off track. Let's do... that's actually get into the pipe writing podcast. So let's get started with... how would you actually begin to write anything? New story, continuing story?
Well, after a while, you've got to be pretty businesslike. You just got to turn up at the desk.
Turn up at the page.
Yeah, turn up at the desk expecting to write. But it's not divorced of any creativity. You still got your ideas. But after a while, I think you just start to think like a writer.
That's a bit of an abstract thought. It's kind of hard to catch a glimpse from.
You're always aware of snippets of conversation, right, of things that people say. You've got to be prepared to notice things and collect things.
Well, like a notebook would help.
Yeah, well, a notebook's good. Or if you've got a particularly good memory, but any sort of interesting image or thing that somebody said, being able to borrow and basically steal stuff from other writers as well. If an author's done a particularly interesting narrative.
Did you start off imitating your idols and then create your own style from that?
Yeah, and I think that's a good way to do it. I mean, obviously, you're going to have the anxiety of influence, and it's you're going to be a weaker writer than the person that you're imitating. But it's like learning any language. You learn from imitation and copycat sort of behaviour. And eventually you learn to speak that language and you can speak for yourself and have less of the influence of that host writer.
So at what point did you start to begin like properly getting to the routine of writing? Was it just more of a hobby to begin with? And then at what point did it become quite serious for what you wanted to become?
I've always had to write. It's not been a question of making myself write.
Right.
It would be if I didn't write, I wouldn't be working.
And that's hard because I have the obviously entire opposite thing. I consider it a hobby and nothing more. And if something comes out of it, great. But other than that, I don't really.
It happens less now. But if I wasn't writing, I'd start to feel progressively more invisible as each day went on without writing. That so sounds... until you become a ghost.
Exactly, you're a writer.
The best view of the thing for being a writer and having that writer's mindset is I'm prone to self-dramatisation and to less literal ways of looking at things.
I suppose that comes with the territory, but again, for me, I just do it for a hobby, and I don't write every day. And sometimes I don't even write for weeks on end, but I do occasionally. But I suppose what I do, I tend to keep notes in a notebook because I was trying to write a sitcom, and I'm still writing it, the first episode of a sitcom. I was trying to write jokes down. Like mishearings and things like that. So I've got some ideas that aren't really that funny, but that's because I'm still starting out with it. But you have to go through that process, don't you, of things not working until you find something that does.
Yeah, in writing, all failure is good.
Yeah.
Because you learn things from it. You do learn more from getting things wrong than you do getting things right. Because when it's right, it's so simple, it's so perfect, and you don't quite know how you've achieved that. You don't necessarily know why it's right. It's easier to criticise a book than to appreciate it and to demonstrate why it works without just showing chunks of it in, say, a book review and saying, look how good this is. But to actually deconstruct that and say how it works is quite difficult. And I think by failing, particularly in different genres, you can pick up all sorts of kind of nods and learn about your own writing.
This week's picks from the Young Writers Hub newsfeed, the Carol Ann Duffy story.
Yeah, apparently, Cassie D, as I'm calling her, thinks poetry is a form of texting. This is a news item from the Norway website. It's Carol Ann Duffy, Britain's first female poet laureate, believes texting is a fine vehicle for writing poetry.
And why does she think that, Wes?
Well, she says the poem is a form of texting. It's the original text. It's a perfection of a feeling in language. I'm less than convinced by that, and I think the difference between poetry and texting is that poetry is meant to be timeless and texting is incredibly disposable. So I've got no idea what she's hoping to achieve with that. But she is appearing at the Norway conference.
Oh, well. We like her, then. It's all right.
No, she's good.
Oh, she's good. Yeah,
she's good. I just don't know what she's trying to achieve with that one.
I suppose an argument against it is that any form of innovative form of language should be used in poetry, because after all, poetry is pure language. It's a pure use of language. So
I think it'd be right to integrate that kind of thing. And if somebody did like a wasteland style epic poem about the 21st century, it would have to have text speak in there. But I don't think just using text qualifies it as poetry necessarily.
I'm not so sure. Well, just the text language of itself in one poem, you don't think that would work?
It could work, but it would depend upon the quality of a poem, which is then poetry. It's about structure and form and the consideration of language in a way that a text generally is just something declarative.
Oh, right, OK, I see what you mean.
Yeah, so I mean, there's a beauty in the language of a text, but it's not necessarily poetry.
But so it was to use it as the language for a poem, it would suit.
Well, you can. It's like saying, you know, you've got ordinary language that we're using now. I wouldn't say that was a poem, but we could use these words in a poem.
Okay, I understand exactly what you mean. No, I do. I poetry is my favourite area of literature, but it's incredibly important. So
there's a lot of people who don't like poetry.
How do you feel about poetry?
I like poetry, but I don't like a lot of contemporary poetry.
I don't mean I don't like poetry altogether.
That's what you're saying.
No.
Well, there's an odd... It's a bit tea cosy.
I think especially the romantic type of poetry I find quite hard to get into.
Yeah, it can be a little bit indulgent. But if there were more poets like somebody like Daniel Sluman...
Oh, yeah, he's on our writer's page, isn't he?
He is, yeah.
Should we get him into interview?
I think we should.
Okay.
Get his views on this matter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He could be our reporter for poetry palaver.
We can, and he's the new poetry editor at Dead Ink.
What's that? Is that a magazine or online magazine?
Dead Ink's my new digital publishing press.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Ah, so you've got a new company.
Yeah, I've got a new company. Arts Council funded. Very good.
Do you want to tell us more about that? This is a very pluggy episode today.
I know, it's terrible, isn't it?
Do you want to tell us about your novel?
Yeah.
Next novel. And all the other publications that you're putting.
Well, the novel I'm rewriting for a new edition with an introduction.
This is Shark,
with an introduction by Kester Aspden.
I've not read Shark, I'll be honest with you.
Wait for the new one to come out, be a couple of months' time.
I think we should have an agreement that we should not read each other's publications.
Why would we agree to that?
Because it would just be a pure friendship rather than working friendship.
Okay.
Let's shake on it now.
We're shaking.
Don't read each other's novels. I won't have a novel, but...
You'd be blown away.
I'll be blown away. I've heard you read extracts of that on YouTube.
Have you? Didn't you research?
I'm interviewing you and you're my guest host, so try to do your research.
I thought you'd
there's a lot of swearing in it.
Well, yeah.
Not suitable for this podcast.
Not suitable for young ears.
So you can't read a page out for us?
No.
Well.
There's not a page without swearing on.
Is that just because of the language of the North, basically? Well,
I'm trying to accurately record the troubles of an ex-soldier living a sort of deadbeat lifestyle and pool sharking, so...
So how is using the language of swearing, etc., that why is that different from using texting in poetry? It's not different at all.
No, Carolyn Duffy, I don't think, is arguing...
I'm struggling to make a point here.
For using texting in poetry. She's saying a text is a poem.
I should have read this article before we started talking.
It's becoming readily apparent.
Readily apparent that we are not prepared
to record. We don't know what we're doing.
It will get better, listeners, I promise you that.
That may be a lie.
But most likely will be a lie, yeah. You're respecting Steve Wright, you've got us.
Who's Steve Wright? Steve Wright in the Afternoon.
Steve Wright in the Afternoon. All he does is play jingles. That's all he does.
Is he the guy who does all the love songs on a Sunday?
I don't know. I don't listen to
him. He plays like 80s synth pop love songs.
Oh, good for him.
Any man who does that is a friend of mine.
He's got that big beefy moustache. Maybe you should grow one in honour.
I can't grow moustaches.
I'm sat here with a beard. I'm only 20. And you know.
No, it's because I have a patch. It doesn't grow.
Why?
I don't know. It's just like a bald patch. Otherwise, I'd be okay.
You could grow a Hitler moustache.
Well, that's the other thing. I would look like Hitler because it grows more there under the nose and I've got a side part.
Your cat is outside the window. He wants to be a part of this podcast as much as we do. This is the end for books. This is a news story on the Norway website. Talking about the death of hardbacks and paperbacks and the rise of e-readers like the Amazon e-reader, Kindle, isn't it?
Kindle, yeah.
The Kindle and all that sort of stuff. And there's been loads and loads and loads of statistics and articles thrown about all over the place and about the paranoia of the death of the paper. Basically, and it's just over exaggerated. I think I'd have to have an e-reader myself, but if I was to have one, I wouldn't stop reading books because basically it's just easier to bring them around. I mean, the e-books, I know they're small and they're quite easy to carry around, but not as easy as a paperback, I don't think.
Do you think it's a question of either or do you think it's pretty much going to be a third way?
It's just no, it's not an either or. I think, especially in the media, they'd like to have a dramatic story just to throw around an either or to make them sound more dramatic than it actually is. It's just another way of reading. I know you have an iPad. I don't know if you read books in it.
Well, this is what I've found, is that I read differently. And I'm reading ebooks, partly because they're cheaper, and I'm more likely to take a risk on...
That's true.
On a newer author. But like, there's a fantastic novel that I can't remember the name of. And I got that for £2, but I would never have read that author before.
And you can't go wrong with that sort of place.
And lessons are risk for people, even if they're just curious.
Is it also the case, like, say with music and CDs, that they've been overpriced for a long, long time? And then you get iTunes and places like that offering cheap downloadable music, and that's driven the price down of CDs so much that music's in cheaper flow. Is that a possible positive for e-readers?
I don't think books are overpriced, though. But I think the trouble for print books has been underpriced. And
oh, really?
This week we've seen the end of Waterstones 3 for 2, and there was a lot of...
Oh, I just bought 3 for 2 the other day.
Oh, well, that's the last one
I hope Dave Gorman's happy.
Because of a book, $7.99, you've got the bookshop who takes a cut, the distributor who takes a cut, the cost of printing, the cost of paying an editor to edit it, the author's royalty, and... I think that's all of them, but there's a lot of people in that pie, and not that the margins aren't amazing.
Right, and so you get more margin for an e-book, would you?
Well, there's...
I know they're cheaper, but...
There's a perception that because it's not printed, an e-book should be a lot cheaper, but printing costs aren't the major costs in producing a book. It's actually marketing and editing,
yeah,
and the cost of running a publishing press. So... In effect, e-books aren't necessarily much cheaper to produce than print books, and Amazon wants all e-books to be at least 20% cheaper than the print version.
So, because you outprice them on the market, basically. So,
yeah,
it's capitalism, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, the people who are probably winning at the moment are the consumers who are getting...
Yeah, that's true.
...really cheap books. But is it a good deal for authors? Is it a good deal for publishers?
Is it also the case that new time writers, debut novelists or short story writers, can publish their e-books quite cheaply as well?
Well, that's a good one. Because the market's really tight, bigger publishers are taking less risks, and you'll see more and more celebrity-style stuff being sold, more and more celebrity authors.
Okay.
I think Dawn French has written a novel now, and there's a whole host of comedians and all sorts of people who are writing that sort of stuff. And the new talent is not being developed. Instead of turning authors into celebrities, we're just turning celebrities into authors. And there is, with publishing online, building a readership, and e-books and so on, and things like Dead Ink, it's going to be a way to develop new writers.
Yeah, because you say Dead Ink, but other magazines are great for putting new talent coming through. I'm sure this is what now we're going to do with their bi-monthly publications
That's one reason to do it. And the other thing with the Narway site is it's all geared for you to do what you want to do. So the enabling fund if you want to do projects, as well as the news to find out about what shape the industry is in, as well as calls for submissions. And
I know I have a profile on Narway. I have 2 blogs published. I don't think I have a readership myself. I've not actually published anything fiction-wise. Not yet, anyway. But it's definitely... an incredibly good tool now, especially for those new writers coming through.
Mm.
I think a lot of the writers, like Daniel Sluman, you mentioned earlier, they've started, I think they've probably started on it, and now they have a bigger readership because of it. And now it's a non-profit organisation, so they're doing it just for the love of the craft of writing. So they only want to help you, is that right?
Norway's lost its Arts Council funding at the moment, so we're a membership organisation. Making revenue from memberships and conferences and events and that kind of stuff. So we're not entirely non-profit, but we are an organisation committed to developing writers and to help people find out what's going on online and wherever.
Well, I've just been a content manager, Dan Reed, myself, my first fiction short story.
That's good.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really helpful actually, because I sent 2 stories in. The first one didn't make it. The second one, the junior editor just come back and said, it's very good, we want to publish it. Here's a few little nicks and tweaks to make, but after that, it'll probably go through. I did all that and she accepted it. So they're not afraid of accepting new stuff as well.
Well, this is an ethos that I always had, and when I was the editor of the Cadaverine, that's... It's something I want to carry across to the hub as well, which is that a lot of stories get dismissed outright when you send them to magazines. But we always believed in interventionist editing. But we believe that you could see sometimes good stories that just needed a bit of a change or a tweak here and there, and that we would work with the author to get the best out of our work.
Yeah, I think mine was just like too much use of a semicolon or something, too much like that. It was only a little thing, only changed. It didn't actually change the content of the story. It's very much my own stuff, so I was very pleased with the service I got. A similar thing for Norway, I imagine, as well.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it can be just changing somebody's grammar because the sentences might be running along or too repetitive. Or sometimes if it's just too short and it's just bam, 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 bam. It's not a pleasant reading experience.
It seems to me that the publisher of any sort, small scale or big scale, it seems more of a team effort in the end than anything else. Obviously, the writer has the overall say, I imagine, but there's like you say, not authoritarian, they have to help you to take away little niggles and little things that are a little bit wrong or things like that. This has gone from ebooks into like general publications, but online publications and ebooks, can they converge? Like, could Avreen consider Norway even consider be make an e-magazine and publish from there onto an iPad or a Kindle?
Yeah. Well, the idea is with this bi-monthly magazine that we publish to collate that into an anthology that is going to be an ebook.
It's good.
I think there's plenty of crossover and convergence, and that's definitely, Dead Ink is a webzine, and that's going to bring in the readers and get people to learn about the authors, and then publish full-length works.
Full-length works?
Yeah, cool. as e-books, so we can get some bigger name authors alongside newer authors.
I know there's a story about Bookslam as a popular literary magazine, start to publish their own anthology, so this is, imagine it's a cheaper option than a publishing a novel that might not sell well. If you sell short stories or anthology of poems,
this is one of the things, it minimises risk.
Exactly.
And that's one of the things you've got with a print book, because you need to put down a big chunk of money to print off a load of books, and then you've got the books, and you've got to get them into bookshops, and you've got to get people to buy them, and you've got to move them around, and you've got to store them somewhere. And if you don't sell them, you've lost out. Whereas the advantage of an ebook is it never goes out of print.
Yes, exactly.
And you don't, there's no risk in terms of printing.
It's on demand, so if you want it, you can buy it then. You don't have to stock in advance.
There's risk in the sense that you can devote a lot of time and care into editing the book and promoting the book. But beyond that, there's no real financial risk.
So your ebook or your short story could be online or in an ebook for decades, even millennia, I suppose. I mean, we don't really know at the moment. But
yeah, you just keep on going and going. But then the other thing is, when it is a free-for-all, people don't become client and read everything. You become more cautious because there's so much stuff out there.
Good. Well, there's more stories on news stories on the Norway website, as well as events and competitions you could enter. Just go to www.norway.co.uk/youngwritershub.
Yeah, there's a lot of internships this week as well.
Internships are very good. I applied to do an internship with Norway for my work experience, and I had a great time working with you and everyone else in the blogging team. So, Wes, as the Young Writers Hub coordinator, can you accurately describe the Young Writers Hub?
No.
No, it's that complicated.
It's so complex.
There's just so much for people, doesn't it?
Yeah. I'm not qualified to do this job.
Not at all. It's just, you can tell, let's face it, you can tell.
Yeah.
Well, what I found about Young Writers Hub is pure news and events that is designed just to help a novice, an amateur writer.
That's right. It's a news-driven resource, I call it. Yes. So we're all about collecting all the interesting, useful things from across the internet and putting it in one place and trying to help join some dots. And there's a thing where a lot of young writers are looking for things or saying, wouldn't it be great if it was a young writers-only magazine, or wouldn't it be fantastic if there was a writers group here or there? And there is, but you just don't know about it. And so part of it is to join the dots like that. And then we have a more of a development angle as well, where we do internships, we do one day conferences about the future of young writers and how they can be supported, as well as doing workshops and open mic nights and so on to give writers a platform. And that's partly what the profiles are about as well. We've got the Supporting the Next Generation of Young Writers and Activists at the Free Word Centre in London, in partnership with ARVON and the National Association for Literature Development. It's going to be discussions about how we can support young writers and batting ideas about.
Okay, good. If you want more information, go to www.narway.co.uk and click on Young Writers Hub. You can find your news, your events, submissions, and get into contact with other people as well. It's a really good resource for new writers and who want to set up their own writing. I'd really recommend it. Well, that's it for this edition of the Young Writers Hub podcast. If you want any more information about the things we've discussed, go to www.narway.co.uk and click on the Young Writers Hub. If you want to get in contact with us, ask a question, do a reading for us, or want to even come on the show, you can go on email us at the Young Writers Hub podcast at googlemail.com. They don't make it easier for you, do they, Google? So please get in contact with us, and hope you enjoyed this our first podcast, and see you again next time.
The Young Writers Hub podcast with Matt and Wes.